24. Underground. Octavia watched from above as Modo effortlessly lifted the stone lid. He was unusually strong under all his oversized clothing, and she was about to tell him so just to see his reaction when he staggered back. A moment later, a thick wall of stench overcame her, making her eyes weep.
"You might not want to come down here," he announced,
covering his mouth and nose with the hood of his cloak.
"Nonsense!"
Octavia climbed quickly down the wooden ladder at the edge of the trapdoor, but as she got closer to the sewer hole, she slowed. Even breathing through her mouth made her gag.
"Oh, nothing like the sweet perfume of sewage to test one's constitution. Do remember, Modo, I grew up in a foundling home. Nothing stank worse than the governess."
With that, she shouldered past Modo and bent over to pick up a rope ladder piled near the hole.
"Off we go," she said, dropping the coils into the darkness below.
Then she hesitated. The entrance was far too small for her bustle. As it was, it had been marked by soot, and she didn't want to add sewage to the mix.
"Oh, Modo, I can't roam around down there with my favourite dress on."
She began unbuttoning her bodice and giggled when Modo looked away.
"Don't worry, I have underclothes on."
I know, but it's improper all the same," he muttered, his face still averted.
"I'm improper at heart. I was educated on the streets of St. Giles, after all."
It took Octavia but a minute to slip out of her dress and bonnet, leaving her in a long-sleeved black underblouse and dark brown pantaloons and stockings. She hung the clothing on the ladder and turned to Modo.
"Oh," he said, relief in his voice. "You're dressed like a boy."
Octavia burst out laughing. When she'd chosen these clothes earlier that day, she couldn't have imagined this scenario. She had simply been preparing herself should she have to run. After the night chasing Esther, she swore that would be the last time she gave pursuit in layers of ankle-length skirts.
"What's that?"
said Modo, pointing at her thigh. Octavia pulled her stiletto from its small sheath and flashed it at him with a smile.
"It's my best friend," she said,
and then slid it back into the sheath without looking at it. She had practiced this move many times in the past few years. She eased herself into the narrow hole and climbed down the rope ladder. The hole was lined with bricks that had become slick with fungi. The circle of light from above revealed a half-broken brick ledge beneath her and not much more to stand on. She stepped onto it. The sewage rippled an inch from her toes. "Don't even think about where this all comes from," she told herself. She moved over to allow Modo to take his place beside her, but he didn't let go of the rope. He poked at the water with his walking stick. She couldn't see his face clearly, but she was certain his grimace matched her own.
"You're almost invisible," Modo said, "except for your hair and eyes. Nice of you to notice them."
She imagined he would be blushing. He was such an easy mark.
"We need a little light."
She reached into one of the pouches in her waistband and removed her pocket lucifer.
"I hope you aren't getting out matches. The gases down here could be explosive. This isn't a match, but there'll be a spark. We'll have to risk it. If there is gas, dive into the water. Sewer gas rises, remember?"
"I knew that."
"Well, here's the test, then."
She found the switch on the back, flicked it, and with a zap and a spark, a bright light glowed into life.
"Boom!"
she said, right into his face, giving him a start. Her voice echoed in the tunnel.
"That's not funny, Miss Milkweed," Modo whispered. "And do be quiet. We have no idea how far away our enemies are."
Octavia tried, unsuccessfully, to look apologetic.
"What kind of light is that?" he asked. "A pocket lucifer. It's one of Mr. Socrates' little gadgets."
Octavia held up the tiny lamp, which was hidden inside a pocket watch. She pointed it right at Modo, and he quickly covered his eyes. For a moment, one eye had looked larger than the other to her.
"It's powered by an electric cell." "Electric cells can be made that small?"
"Of course. You should ask him for one. He has all sorts of clever inventions. Pneumatic pistols, wireless telegraphs, electric nail clippers." She laughed.
"I made up that last one. So what direction do you suggest?"
The light revealed an arched brick tunnel and a long stream of sewage flowing into the dark. Here and there, large rats skittered along the edges.
"I don't know that it matters," Modo said.
"Forward, then. Let's call it Octavia's intuition. I guess I'm going to have to sacrifice my shoes. I ain't walking through that in bare feet. I'm no mudlark."
She had long ago learned to do these sorts of tasks without dwelling on them. In her line of work, hesitation could be death. Of course, she told herself. In this case, the smell might be the death of me. She stepped into the cold stream of sewage, teeth clenched, and she felt it moving around her calves and knees. It wasn't just human excrement, but anything that could be dumped down the drain. Rags, twigs and leaves, fat, blood and skin from slaughterhouses. In an eddy near the wall, a baby floated, face up, its left arm draped over the brick edging. Octavia's stomach tightened, but a hesitant step closer revealed that it was just a cloth doll with a ceramic head. She held the pocket lucifer high above her head, speaking quietly.
"There are miles of tunnels. We could even tramp underground to Buckingham Palace and watch the royals do their business." "Don't even jest about that," Modo exclaimed.
Octavia laughed, saying,
"You're from Greenland."
"What do you mean?"
"You're so green, you're from Greenland."
"I'm not green."
"Methinks the lady doth protest too much."
"I'm no lady.
And don't you dare quote Shakespeare at me. You don't even like him."
Octavia shrugged, tossed her hair back, and sloshed on ahead of him. From time to time her footing would slip on the bumpy floor of the sewer lane and she'd wobble. Her fear, of course, was of falling over. Lines on the wall showed how high the effluent ran during heavy rains. She pictured a sudden downpour, she and Modo up to their chest in muck, or swept away to who knows where in mere moments. They stopped at a split in the tunnel. Octavia moved her pocket lucifer back and forth.
Do we go left or right?"
"Over here," Modo said excitedly. "There are scratches in the shape of a triangle."
"Well, this was a piece of good luck."
Octavia slapped him on the back.
"Don't do that,"
Modo scolded her in a harsh whisper.
"Please don't touch my back."
She pulled her hand away in confusion and let him push on ahead of her. She followed for a long time, wondering why he had lashed out at her that way, before she broke the silence.
"So where are you from, Modo? Or may I ask that?"
"You may ask me anything, Miss Milkweed. Whether I answer it or not is another matter."
"It's Tavia," she said. "Please call me Tavia."
"Well, Tavia," he said,
and she was pleased that he was sounding friendly again.
"I grew up near Lincoln in a house that belonged to Mr. Socrates. He raised me."
Octavia stopped in the middle of the stream.
"You were raised by Mr. Socrates?"
"Of course."
He sounded proud.
"And Mrs. Finchley was my mother, my governess, but unlike yours, she smelled good. Have you met her?"
"No."
"Is Mr. Socrates your father?"
"No. What a silly question. I don't know who my parents were. Mr. Socrates, he found me, trained me, raised me."
"So you're an orphan?"
"We have that in common, at least. I was left outside a foundling home with just the clothes on my back and a one-word note. Burden."
Modo stopped and waited for her to catch up. The rats had multiplied, squeaking madly, and scattering from the light.
"How did you become an agent?" he asked.
"When I was 12, I tried to pick the pocket of an old gentleman. His servant, an Indian, caught me. The gentleman, as you can guess, was Mr. Socrates. He gave me his address to visit if I wanted real work. Since pickpocketing was a good way to end up swinging at the end of a rope, I decided to take him up on his offer. I still can't believe he paid me to read books, to practice voices, even to learn to swim with Tharpa's help. And now here I am, my boring old life."
All the while, Octavia had been flashing her light along the walls.
"Look, Modo, an etching. But there's no split in the tunnel. So what does it mean?"
Modo sloshed over to the wall and touched the triangle.
"Miss Milkwood, I mean Tavia," he said, "there's something sticking out here."
"What do you mean?"
The centre of the triangle is—" He pushed on it, and the section slipped back into the wall. A door-shaped portion shifted out of his way, revealing a tunnel. It had been seamlessly set into the wall.
"Brilliantly done,"
Octavia whispered. "Now to see if anyone's home." She held up the pocket lucifer, lighting the roughly hewn tunnel. It was high enough to walk through upright.
"Carpe diem,"
she said, drawing her stiletto, and happy to finally be able to step out of the sewage. She motioned Modo to join her against the tunnel wall. Once together, they slid along it for 10 feet or so until they came to a large room in complete disarray. Furniture had been flipped over or broken, flasks had been smashed everywhere, and the smell of smoke mingled with the sewer stench. A door leading to a smaller room was hanging from its hinges. Octavia shone her light to be sure no one was hiding there.
"Lovely place," she said,
while stepping carefully into the room. Modo poked through smashed beakers and half-burned papers on the floor, using his walking stick.
"We're in the right place, anyway," he said,
showing her a torn, partly burned paper with the clockwork symbol stamped at the top. Octavia held the light so they could both read it.
"To apply the Lycae Unium in 2 doses, out should be equal to 1/32 of the weight of acts, the conscious personality, which is suspended, and alleable but savage personality emerges. Bone density harnesses the inner potency. This is the discovery. This energy can be directed through a filament to gyro. 5% of subjects die due to organ failure."
"It looks like a portion of Dr. Hyde's notes," Modo said. "Lycaonium might be the name of the tincture.
Did you read the last line? 5% of the subjects die.
It may be worse than that." He held the paper up to his eyes. "There's another number in front of that 5, but I can't read it."
"Ah, I don't want to know. Just put it away. The less time we spend here, the better."
Modo stuffed the scrap into the breast pocket of his coat. They went into the smaller room, finding what appeared to be 2 operating tables surrounded by trolleys of surgical instruments. Octavia picked up a restraining belt, then let it drop.
"Their patients weren't exactly willing. We certainly don't want to be caught by these people."
"Oh, I can guarantee that," Modo replied.
"But why did they destroy everything?
Perhaps they know we're on their trail." She shone the pocket lucifer on a small set of manacles attached by chains to the wall.
"For children,"
Octavia said, her stomach churning as she thought of Esther. Modo cried out in alarm as he leaned over and snatched a red cloth from an upturned chair.
"I gave this neckerchief to a boy at the Red Boar."
"A boy?
Oppie. He's such a good child.
I remember him. He led me to your room. How can you be sure it's his?"
Modo held it up to the light of the pocket lucifer, revealing an embroidered W in one corner.
"It's for Wellington. I thought it would be a nice touch for my business. Poor, poor Oppie."
Octavia could see he was devastated, and her heart ached for him, but before she could tell him how sorry she was, something chirped on the far side of the larger room.
"Did you hear that?"
she asked. They followed the sound to a desk littered with broken flasks. A glint caught Octavia's eye, and she shone her light on a small silver sparrow, half-covered by a sheet of paper, its head cocked to one side.
"Why, it's a clockwork toy,"
Modo said, reaching for it. But the bird flitted a few inches away and blinked at them. Modo grabbed at it, but it hopped over his hand.
"It must be able to sense when I'm too close," he said,
wonder in his voice.
"What a clever device,"
Octavia said, as the bird stared at her light.
"But why would they leave it behind?
Who knows? Maybe they have hundreds of them." He thrust his hand out one more time and snatched the sparrow.
"There, got you."
He lifted the bird up and held it proudly out to Octavia, who said,
"Modo, a string is dangling from it."
Then something began to glow behind the desk.
"What's that?"
Octavia cried.
"Quick, shine your light over here,"
Modo said, dropping the bird. Now they could see that the string, which trailed down the back of the desk, was burning and connected to a handful of candles that had been strapped together.
"No,"
thought Octavia. "Not candles."
"Modo,
she whispered.
It's dynamite.
Then she felt Moda grab her around the waist and leap toward the tunnel. It was a moment too late.